right, Oz, so welcome back to the podcast. Last week's episode, for any of you out there who haven't watched it, Mike from Sim Racing 604 was with us. It was a great episode. I suggest you go back if you missed it. So, Oz, we talked about a lot of things during that interview, and one of the things that I wanted to brush upon before we start our own episode here was when he was talking about his perspective on realism. And my impression from what he was saying was that it was like an end user experience, you know, just basic, are the cars believable as a driver? And that really got me thinking, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on it too. It got me thinking about, you know, what is real for, is it subjective? Is it, his idea of real was different than mine. And I was wondering if you thought the same thing and what you would consider to be real. Have you had any thoughts on this kind of this subject?
Yeah, there's definitely the most common one seems to be if people feel that the cars are, or if the cars feel believable. That's definitely the sometimes the most important job of a simulator. But I tend to think that there are other things to it as well. So for me,
right,
I really value the feeling that that the sim is actually simulating physics, like a lot of the physics that go into it. And yeah, maybe sometimes the end result is lacking, mm-hmm. like it's not the satisfying drive that we sometimes crave, but it's, to me, it's really for a big sim, like big scale sim, something that I really invest my time into. I hope it has a lot of depth to it. So,
and do you mean like driving on the edge, like that kind of
that's
feel?
One thing, but I'm talking about things like Live Track, for example, in AMS2 and Project Cars 2 as well, obviously. So,
oh, okay.
Live Track is one. Weather is just something that I'm like, it's 2021. I mean, weather is such a big part of racing because you know it's a thing you can't control. So, but it makes a huge dent. So, I think weather it's really important to me. I would still play a sim if it doesn't have weather. But I think as far as like, is it realistic? I mean, weather is. Come on, it's.
It is. Yeah. It rains in real life.
Yeah.
So, as far as I can tell. But then there are other aspects too that it made me think about too. And that is, the difference between having a car feel believable and then actual real life driving is such a debatable topic, and you see it everywhere. You know, people that have real life driving experiences are trying to describe those real life driving experiences. People put weight on people's opinions who have real life driving experiences. But it doesn't seem like a lot of many sim racers have real life racing, like on the edge, competitive driving experience. But does a sim, is there something where a sim has, there's a contention between being believable and too close to real life driving? Because I would imagine in my mind that a lot of these cars that, you know, AMS2 is trying to simulate are extremely difficult to drive, to the point where, Joe Smith can't just jump into his, you know, motion rig and complete a lap in a competitive way. You don't understand what I'm saying? It would take Mario Andretti 20 years of driving experience to get to handle the Lotus 79. But we can boot it up and do a lap in it and complete a lap and casually, right? Do you understand what I'm saying? So I was thinking about this one aspect of it where, like, are you familiar with the Uncanny Valley in CGI in movies?
Yes.
When you have an animation where... when you have an animated movie, but they use, they try to make the animation so realistic to real people that it actually, people don't enjoy watching it because they're so close to real, but so far away at the same time. I actually had the thought that AMS2 was kind of, and for some people, was in this like uncanny valley. It's getting to the point where they're trying to reflect how the cars drive in a realistic fashion so much more than they're used to, that they're sort of like a pushback. Does that make sense? Do you get the same impression from some comments about that?
Yeah, I think that's a real risk with Sims, that it tries to be real, but obviously can't be real. I'm also thinking about it from the perspective of now that you have all this dynamic behavior in the cars, like with the tires and the bumps, and it goes from oversteer to understeer, like the balance shifts so easily, even mid corner. We're kind of not used to that. But if
right,
I think it kind of seems like with a like it is like that sometimes in real life when you have a race car, not talking about a road car, which I mean, if a road car did that, that would be probably lawsuits all over. But which is, I think, something that needs to be understood as well when people compare it to actual real life driving. I don't understand why sometimes there's a particular YouTuber who's famous for not having a driver's license, and I just don't understand why that's even it just doesn't seem relevant to me at all. I mean, he still like drives carts as far as I know, like stuff like that. So I mean,
right,
why does that make a difference? But yeah,
well, I was gonna say, you know, there was a, I think it was at Silverstone, where Sergio Perez was in quali, and he spun the car coming out of Magots and Becketts and threw that to the back straight there. And I remember reading a lot of posts about how, you know, you see him in Discord, you see him, you know, forums sometimes. They're saying, well, F1 cars are planted. F1 cars are so planted. And here's Sergio Perez spinning what you can consider to be one of the, if not the best F1 car today. It certainly wasn't planted when he spun it coming out of Magots and Becketts. There was another quote by, I think, Martin Brundle during the French Grand Prix, where he specifically said these cars are always sliding, that we can't really see from the TV, but there's always a slide going on. And that's what I'm getting in AMS2, is getting that car in that slide. Not like sliding, like drifting, like Tokyo Drift.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean. You know, you get you're in a high-speed corner, you get the front end, you get the rear end, front end digging in, the rear end cooking, breaking free, but you're trying to keep it on that wheel slip angle. That's when the slide starts to happen. And sometimes both the front and the rear slide at the same time. It's a purely balanced car going through a high-speed corner. It's a wonderful feeling. So people's opinions about how cars should behave cannot be one-to-one with real life, simply just from inexperience and not being able to, you know, say that the cars can actually do this. And this is not to say that the cars in AMS2 are perfect, and I'm not defending the game in that way, in any way, shape, or form. But sometimes debates about what's wrong with a car, a specific car, can be muddied by the conversation about, you know, what's believable versus what's real. And I kind of approach the whole conversation from a more pragmatic view, in that, like, if the car is what it is in the game, when I get my hands on it, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make it so that it's more drivable. And it has nothing to do about whether or not the car should be more drivable in its own right. And not from the defaults, obviously. I'm changing the default setups. I'm talking about like from the parameters that are purely Reza handled, right? And then there's other ways I was thinking that people can find realism in their games, and you know, hugely popular games like Codemasters, the F1 Codemasters series, highly immersive. You're driving against Lewis Hamilton. You get absorbed in the story. You're absorbed in, you know, what it is to be a part of an F1 racing team, making decisions about R&D, that kind of immersion. ACC has doesn't have that type of aspect to it, but ACC certainly has all of the, you know, all of the cars on the grid. It has all of the real life liveries, or at least close, very close to them. All of the tracks are very well done, hyper immersive sounds, the visuals, everything, and that could draw people too. You know, for me, completely different thing than Mike when he was saying that he, you know, believes in an end user experience, and that's where realism comes from for him. For me, the realism was being able to identify an issue with the balance or the setup of a car, relying on real life principles that aren't made up out of the blue to plug into AMS2 and then realize a consistent and predictable response. You know, you soften up the front, it's going to turn in a little bit better. You know, that kind of thing. And that's just basically a simplified explanation of it. But everything in the game really responds to that, including the tire model, which, as far as I know, is the only real... I'm not going to say other games don't have tire models, that you don't have tire heat and temperatures into account. But AMS 2 certainly pushes that envelope to the point where the tire heat and the tire management are really a primary concern for driving these cars through an extended period, for an extended stint. Almost to the point where, if you watch some of my tutorial videos, I emphasize and stress, you know, tire heat management. And that is a concept from real life. We all know that F1 tire management is the name of the game. Being able to squeeze as much grip and within a tire temperature window as you can. But I feel like that's not part of a lot of sim today, you know, but that is real to me. And I don't think I could ever really go back. Now, I wanted to talk about also, speaking of whether or not cars feel proper, the RSR. Okay. When we first got our hands on it, I took me a ton of practice. You loved it right out of the box. You wrestled that thing down and took control. But there's been some mixed reviews coming out on the forums and other places. People are noticing some, quirks with how the car is handling. Do you, have you read any of these things? Do you know what I'm talking about here?
Of the typical things being said.
Right. So there's, I think one of them was a low speed handling issue.
Yeah. So that's where basically... the RSR is tricky to, like, when you drive it, you notice that it does feel kind of understeery, but perhaps not understeer, perhaps not actual understeer, but just doesn't really have that great turn in, doesn't really have that much grip, to be honest. Unless you right. have that balanced or slightly oversteery balance in corners, which is where you have to aim
right.
with that car, I believe, because that's how the rear tires have a lot of grip, and they can, you can put a lot of stress on the rear tires. You can have a lot of acceleration, but also lateral force on the...
Oh, right, yeah. Longitudinal lateral.
Things. So you can have grip, yeah. both. You can be accelerating out of the corner, but also having lateral force on the rear tires, they can take a lot of that, those massive bias plies. But I think the yeah. turn in, if you're just trying to rely on the fronts, it's not that great. But when you come to a low speed corner, what happens is you probably downshift the first gear. If we're really talking about a low speed corner, like basically hairpins or there's like U corners, whatever you would call that. Yeah, right, it doesn't have to be mega yeah. tight, but that you downshift the first. And what seems to happen in first gear is that the it seems like there's a lot of engine brake. Which first gear being so short, right. it just multiplies the effect it has on the drivability. Yeah,
Right. So it feels like the back end is coming out when you're not, you don't feel like you should be going fast enough for it to break grip.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. So I noticed that at Salvador, you know, at the couple, they're not really, I wouldn't say they're hyper tight hairpins, but if you make it a mistake and go into first, you definitely better, you better be throttle blipping. And then getting back into second as soon as possible, because the back end does come around and you will have to drift, and that's not necessarily the fastest way around. I'm sure some people can probably make it work, but you know, as far as just like average plus drivers, it's going to feel odd, right? And I think I can reiterate, I've seen with what you said about braking, the car is. Like, it seems like you have a very small window of brake sensitivity. Like, it really does not like to be turned when you're braking. It really likes to be right on that. Like, if you add too much brake, the car doesn't handle it very well. If you have too little, obviously you're not going to stop. But you have, there's like this really small window of braking that it's finicky. But do you think it's I know for a fact that it's, there's some setup things that you can do to make the cars a little bit more compliant, but do you ultimately think that there's something going on behind the scenes with the RSR that still needs to be cleaned up by Reza?
Probably. I mean, there's always room for improvement with the things we cannot affect. It does feel believable to me. Maybe it's just a bit.
Right.
The idea it is correct, and I don't mind the car being wild, but maybe it is a bit too wild. I can fully accept that. I just think it is a really almost like the perfect car to demonstrate the sort of over the limit driving the MS2 is so good at, where you're just regularly over the limit. Just not the fastest way to go, but you're just gonna end up there if you push the car, and it's just part of the it's just part of the game. It's not, nothing bad happens from that, and I think some people are just not that used to it. But that's not to say that that's not like an explanation for if there is something wrong with it. I mean, I'm not defending any like actual issues with the car, but I think it's just like. Yeah. If you really appreciate the going over the limit, I think this is just a fantastic car to do that in. So that's why I wasn't really at all bothered with any possible issues. But yeah,
I think I agree with that, because I feel like the car responds well to when you're pushing it. Like when you're really kind of just getting it out there on the edge of its capabilities, it seemed like it was, the more practice I put into doing that, the more in tune with it I felt. But the more I kind of got in my own head about it and slowed down, it was sort of like it didn't respond to that very well. But then at the same time, like you know, there's, like I said, the Uncanny Valley are retro historic classical cars supposed to be easier to drive. Now take that statement and then contrast this with some of the things that I've read from actual drivers, where they say, like, you know, you turn the car into the corner and you just steer with the throttle, and like it literally just goes where you want it to. It drives itself. Like, that's literally what I'm like reading, like paraphrasing, of course. And that's not necessarily the case that I get from the RSR in the game. Not to say that the one in the game isn't something that I find really fun to drive. It is. It's fun. It's challenging. But, you know, reading and hearing about these interviews, it kind of gives me pause to be like, okay, so I think maybe there could be something to it. The GAR was a fantastic car. It was super competitive, if not dominant, and one of the reasons it's conjectured to be so dominant was that it was on the easier edge of, you know, more drivers. It was within more drivers' capabilities to drive to its limits, and its limits were probably superior to the cars around them. So, yeah, I thought that that was an interesting thing. And I honestly don't think that this is the final package. I know for sure that there's probably going to be some type of big fix, either globally or particularly to the RSR, that's going to improve its handling. I don't think they've ever had a car where they just like kind of put it in the game and then they left it. And we all know like the recent history of the M1 Pro car, the DTMs. The change they made to the M1 Pro car was amazing. And I was just driving that the other night. And talk about steer with the rear, it's so there with that it's so much fun. I was at Silverstone and just around one of those high speed corners, and you press the pedal down and you can feel the back end, the car starts turning in, so you lighten it up a little bit and then goes back, and just playing that balance, and I barely was turning the wheel at all, and it's just a wonderful feeling. So I know that they can probably get there at some point. But next, and this could be this next topic could bring some light on the subject with the RSR, and it's another recent. I can't say it's its own thread, but it's a discussion within some of the physics threads and in some of the main threads about throttle mapping and some peculiarities that people have come across where the revs, when you're using the accelerator, are not acting in a linear fashion. And I've seen your name in these threads, so don't tell me you haven't seen these. So I know you have. So could you explain to people a little bit better what that is? What is throttle mapping?
Throttle mapping is, when you think about the throttle pedal, it is maybe easy to think that it's a very linear control. At the end of the day, they're not linear. And the throttle map in a sim is there to simulate that disconnection. But it's not just the disconnection, but it's just okay. The way it's basically how much torque at any given rev. At any given revs, okay. With any given throttle pedal position, how much torque is it putting down?
Yeah, so examples, I would say at the low end, you're looking at like the BMW M4 GT4 would have a lot of low rev torque.
And especially these old cars, and my favorite example is the Omega stock car. That is just a torque monster. You give it just a little bit throttle in low revs, and because it has a lot of torque for its weight. I mean, weighs at about, what was it, like, right, around 1,000 kilos?
Around 1,000 kgs.
And combine that with 450 newton meters of torque, and you get like not all of it, but you get a big chunk of that torque at low revs, which is some throttle.
The next car was the DTM. I felt like the DTM had a lot more torque at the mid range.
Yeah, it's a very high rev limiter engine.
So it kind of carried through. And then, obviously, I think the spool turbos, you hit a certain point where the spool kicks in, and this is all part and parcel.
It's all related.
Talking about here is like the throttle maps. Your the power is going to come in, the torque is going to come in at different points of your throttle, and it's not going to be just like a linear power delivery depending on the car you're driving. I think the M1 Pro car is, I'm not sure about the torque. I know for the horsepower, it's completely linear. If you look at the telemetry, it goes from like zero pedal, it's down at the bottom, and then it's a straight line up to the right for horsepower. As soon as you hit the rev limiter, that's the most horsepower. Now, as far as torque is concerned, I'm not really 100% sure, but they're both in play. But what people have found is that there's a sort of a rev jump at the low end scale of throttle inputs, almost like to the point where people are lightly touching the throttle and it goes from, 1,000 RPMs to 4,000, 5,000 RPMs just like instantaneously. And that it was identified by, I think, a user on the forums, and then a discussion developed, and one of the solutions was throttle sensitivity, adjusting throttle sensitivity in your in-game settings. Did you read about that, or have you tried that, adjusting your throttle sensitivity at all?
Yeah, I actually noticed this a couple of months back already, but didn't think much of it. But there is definitely a gap. So I think the RSR was the final nail in the coffin for some people, maybe. Or that's when they actually really noticed it. Or maybe that he hadn't driven some other cars that also had the same phenomenon.
I think that's the context where it came. The context of what we were talking about before is where the the throttle map conversation and the throttle sensitivity conversation
and is actually, turns out that even though it started as a discussion about throttle maps, it wasn't about the throttle map actually. Well, it might be that there's still something in the RSR throttle map, who knows, but there is a separate thing having to do with this is with the relationship between your pedal, your hardware, and, or maybe the drivers, but like your hardware, let's simplify it, your hardware, so your throttle pedal, the one you're pushing in actual life, and the sim taking that information and giving it to the throttle map. Now, there's some kind of disconnection there where in the very, very low end, so if you imagine a curve, or a linear curve going from 0 to 100, and how that relates to what's going on in the game, and not, again, not the actual torque that the car is putting down, but just like you,
right,
what you would see if you look at the how it looks in the in the hardware versus what the game sees. So that it almost looks like at the default 50 throttle sensitivity, it almost looks like there's a, like it skips the first percent or two in the curve. And this doesn't have anything to do with the throttle map necessarily, but it is related in the sense that because for the reasons we went through, some of the throttle maps are really sensitive down in the low end of the scale. So you need to have a light foot, careful light throttle foot there, and that's made impossible if there's a gap.
Yeah,
that's just like, because it almost feels like it goes from no torque or like negative torque, which would be like engine braking, to let's say 100 newton meters of torque. I mean, this is probably exaggerating it, but you're missing a lot of fine control when that happens. So that seems to be the case. I forget if it was even confirmed, but this basically what you can do for now is you can lower the throttle sensitivity, which seems to fix the issue. Now this, it just doesn't mean that there's something wrong with the sensitivity curve per se. It just means that lowering sensitivity masks whatever is there, whatever issue is there. And
okay, so yeah, it's like an ad hoc.
The problem with that though is, at least for me, when I tried, because some people recommend like using 16, so that definitely gives you a lot of, like, you can, it's easy to, for example, in the M1, it's easy to choose any rep you want between 1,000 and 3,000. So that if that's the problem area, it doesn't exist. I mean, you have all the control you want,
right?
With 16 throttle sensitivity, at least with my hardware. And the problem with that is it also shifts it changes the whole sensitivity. It changes how the throttle works essentially, because then it's not just the problem areas. If you think about like from 0 to 50% throttle in your hardware, that there's a lot of the resolution is then in that area. So, and then after that, it goes to 100 pretty fast. Up. Yeah. So basically the
right. And I so it's like a it's like an arc of increasing effectiveness in the throttle. So at the lower end, when you first touch it, it's like the first 50% of your throttle, whatever your how much you're pushing your throttle down, it could only really impact the car like say 20%. And then once you get to the second 50%, it starts to exponentially go up. You know, it increases the input into the game by 80%. And I'm talking just raw figures here, but it gives you that a little bit more control at the low end, but and then the high end, it just gives you that jump.
I think it just makes having been used to the default for so long, it just makes the throttle feel weird to me, but not completely.
Right. I tried the lower end settings, but it didn't resonate well with me. I think I stuck with the DTM is when I was really kind of just messing around with it, and I think I wound up at like 37. Yeah. And I thought that was a good middle ground, but I felt like because of the DTM had that torque at the mid level of the revs, it kind of, I felt like maybe that was hurting because it would just kind of start kicking up right around then, right? And I wanted that fine tuning in the mid range because of the throttle map. So I think the ultimate point is, and I've read also that, you know, it doesn't work at all with GT3. So I think the ultimate point is it really depends on the car about whether or not, you know, a throttle sensitivity adjustment or lowering it would be beneficial. But I've heard some amazing things. I've read some amazing things about how it really helps certain cars, but then on certain cars it probably hurts. But like that brings us to the next level of analysis. Like, should we be having to gimmick the throttle sensitivity to, try to game the map if there's something wrong at the low end?
Yeah, I get what you mean. So if you're not used to this, because I still believe that there's, in a lot of cars, there's nothing wrong with the map, but if it might make you feel that there's something wrong when this gap exists, but also it does.
Well, I mean, I think if you watch the videos, there's like ones where it goes from zero or like 100,000 revs to 4,000 instantaneously. So it's
that's
like
in your
right
face,
in
but
your
that,
face.
That has to do with this weird gap that should be removed, whatever's causing it. But you could also change the sensitivity of your car so that you don't have to get used to the throttle map being different from car to car. That's also a thing because it is really sensitive down low. In a lot of the old cars, and in some of the more modern stuff like GT3s, it's not really that sensitive in the low throttle pedal positions. So there's,
if anything, it's not at all, and like it's just there's no life at the low
this
end
is
at all. Like
this is how I think this is basically how maybe the throttle maps in real life evolve as well as we get, like, because we are able to make them more linear with modern technology. I think that's what's going on.
Right.
Might be completely wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that Rays is going to be looking at it for sure. They have been relatively quiet recently. And so usually that kind of leads me to think that there's something big coming down the line. And these threads that I'm talking about aren't like just, a couple of posts. They're typically, all day conversations that go on for a week, just back and forth and back and forth, and people posting video evidence. And if that kind of stuff doesn't come across, then I don't know what will. And I trust them in that regard. So hopefully something is coming in down the line. So let's move into the second half of the show and start talking about the cars themselves, the ones that we've driven. So Oz, you mentioned the Lotus, right? So which Lotus were you driving? I couldn't remember what you said. It was Lotus, but I didn't catch the number.
23. So that's the
that old thing.
Tiny green soapbox. I almost like had dreams of driving it the other day, and I had to do it because I remember it used to be really fun. It still is. It's not, doesn't really, as a car, it doesn't really do much because it just drives in a straight line almost and doesn't turn. I mean, it has really skinny tires, probably bias ply. And it is of that age, actually, that they're probably bias ply. But
It probably is. It's probably like unbiased
just no
ply.
ply.
It's just rubber. Somebody got a
Solid
balloon and
rubber.
filled it with air.
Yeah, it's just rubber. Like a bit, just two balloons. Yeah. Oh, I mean, four balloons. But yeah, it is a really fun car because it's one of those momentum cars. Now, you do have a lot of
Right.
throttle steering with that. And it works in the, our old friend, liftoff oversteer. It's like that, but
Oh,
an
really?
actual liftoff oversteer. It's just if you're on power, you just get less steering because car dynamics. But car dynamics
Right, it's
having to do
throttle
with this
steering.
car, yeah, it's understeering on throttle, and then it doesn't actually lift off oversteer because at least for me, I don't think it's possible to make it spin going off the throttle. So it doesn't even get into a slide, but it just feels like it's almost going into a slide, but it doesn't. It sticks. It stays planted, but it turns in really well off throttle. And by really well, I mean just barely okay. But like
I think I've driven it once, and it was kind of novel. I never really got into some of those old machines. I think I should try it. I don't know when, but they did. It seems like it would be a nice car to drive in, like a
yeah,
casual league situation, just
it
for
should make
shits and
for
giggles or
good
whatever.
racing. If any, like, people like to race MX-5s, and this is it's not it's very different to an MX-5 on paper, but it is actually similar.
I think there's probably people that drive MX-5s out there
No,
like,
no.
what?
I don't like it. I don't mean that it's like an MX-5, but it is a momentum car in the same way. Like, you have to never slow down because it's impossible to get that speed back, and you just try to just send it to corners without scrubbing off too much speed, and you just with this especially, it does lack that turn in, so I don't know, you gotta find the turn in somewhere. But yeah, it's a really, I don't know what it is about. It's probably also in VR because you're sitting in that soapbox. It feels so, it feels so British as well. Like, it's just,
You need a scarf
yeah.
when you drive
And
it
I maybe
and
smoking five
goggles.
cigarettes at the same time, that sort of thing. But
I've been working on some interesting vehicles, and you may know a little bit more about these because of your website, Cars of AMS too, but the
yeah.
AJRs, the P1s, I started working on a build for those coming along, or one of them at least. I was hoping at some point when I was doing my testing, I was working initially with the V6. And oh, I should explain to people out there, there's four different AJRs. Okay, there's a Chevy V8, a Honda four cylinder, and a Judd. I think that's a V10, right? And then a V6 turbo of unknown origin, which in real life I think is there was a Nissan V6 turbo, and then there were also a Chevrolet V6 turbo. So it's mimicking one of those, but essentially each of the cars has their own weight distribution, different weights, different fuel consumptions, different even though the setups in the screen when you come into the game, they're all the exact same. All the cars behave uniquely to one another. And I initially thought doing the V6 testing that I'd be like, okay, I get one build, four builds for the price of one, they're done. Lickety split, all the AJRs are done. But one of the things that I found that was, I always say this, but it's a beautiful thing about AMS too, is that the weights do make a difference on how you set up the cars. So it turns out that at the end of the day, after I was testing some of the different cars, I was like, these setups aren't going to work for all of them. So when I thought one day I was going to get four builds done in one, nope, it's not the case. The Honda V4 Turbo is a lot different than the V6 Turbo. And I'm sure that the Chevy is probably different than the Judd and all of them altogether. So it turns out I might need four different variations on the same build. Difficult thing about that is, even though it could be like a small change, because one thing affects the next, it makes, like, you'd have to change everything. Like, so if I change the spring in the rear of one of them, because the weight is different in the rear, I might have to change the ride height. If I change the ride height, I might have to change the front ARB. If I change the front ARB, you know, it just like goes down this line. I might have to change the arrow. You know what I mean? It's like it just goes down this path of fine tuning. And then at the end of the day, it might just be like a couple of clicks for somebody if they see the setup on the video. So, but I want to also talk about DTMs. I mentioned it. My build came out last week. And I know we've talked about DTMs before, but if I had any chance to have to check my build out at all?
Unfortunately, I am.
You're allowed to say no.
Unfortunately, didn't have enough time to do that, but we can talk about that as a thing.
Well, I did Nordschleife, and the reason why I bring up the DTM at Nordschleife was because I want to talk a little bit about the AI. And how impossible it is to race at Nordschleife. But then, like, in order to be successful there, I felt like I had to drive like, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of had to just get in there and bang doors a little bit. And the car is not easy to drive at speed either. Like, it's not like stuck to the ground. It's not a planted machine.
No.
So even like minor wheel inputs, they do impact the weight transfer of the car, and you can feel that, and like you can overcorrect and you can get into trouble really quickly. But I felt like the AI there, the track is limited. It's very narrow. But man, oh man, they get at you there. And they're like nibbling at your hindquarters constantly. And I felt like... throughout the early half of the night when I was trying them, because you had to kind of learn the AI to a certain degree when you're playing single player, because you just never know what they're going to do on track sometimes. So you kind of have to learn where they're going to be slow. If you want to drive close racing with AI, you have to practice with them.
Yeah.
You really do.
Yeah,
do you feel the same way?
It depends on the car, but some cars do have this issue at some tracks where the AI is just a bit too slow coming out of some corners, that sort of thing. And I did notice this, and I forget what car it was, but you have some corners where you're like, I'm just going to overtake someone every lap in the same corner, because the AI is just
right,
just going to not get a very good launch. Yeah,
there's a corner at Yacht Paragua. It's that really tight left-hander. At the end of the third sector, I believe it's a tight, like sort of like a hairpin almost. It's a tight chicane where you go left and then right, and then there's the longer right that leads to the front straight. Not Jaca Perigo, I'm sorry. Goiânia. There's that left hander that's really tight, and then a quick right, and then you accelerate out. That left hander, you can overtake. If you're moderately close to the AI, you can overtake an AI every lap because they're so slow out of the previous corner. But then when you get on that last corner, that last flowing right-hander, you might as well just wave bye-bye, and you know, because they're mailing it. You know, they're going down that straight, and it's hard. You really don't really catch up to them until the end of the straight. So that track is one of those ones where I feel like the calibration is a little bit off. Nordschleife, I don't think the calibration's off per se, but there is a noticeable difference between the first half of Nords and then the second half of Nords. I feel like the AI is better in the second half.
Or is it because you're
the first
worse
half.
The second half, because you never you never practice it?
It's probably the case. Actually, it's probably column A, column B. You know, I never really thought about that. How dare I ever criticize my own driving? But I did notice also with the DTM when I was driving it, is like as I got faster with it, the AI became less of a, you know, less of a pain in the rear. Like they weren't nipping at me all the time because I was just kind of going at it with the car and just taking and stretching the limits of the car. Now I imagine that problem would probably crop back up if I bumped up the strength or whatever, but man, that's a difficult track to
It is,
race.
yeah.
And
I don't know. It's
I have to tell you.
like it is a problematic track in some ways. Like I don't want to. I can already hear the pitchforks coming out, but it is problematic. It is a problematic track in some areas. It's just it's too long for casual racing, right? It's difficult to truly learn it. I mean, that is also part of its. Why it's so fantastic, right? It's tricky because it's so wild
You
as a track. It's so wild.
it is.
It's
It's
difficult to
insanity. If you're doing a sprint
it.
race
Yeah,
there,
it's
it's
difficult to have
insane.
close racing because that sometimes the track has other ideas. Like try going side by side there. I mean, like you barely know the. I mean, you can barely drive. Drive through the whole lap fast, like pushing it, and now introduce someone driving next to you, and you have no idea if you can actually like what is the correct speed. I mean, it's already difficult to do at a regular circuit, but like Norwich just makes it that much more difficult to judge. Like, how fast can I go to this corner, which has like 500 crests on it, and like it's. Yeah, side by side with someone.
I think it's great for an
Yeah.
endurance context. I think it's great for endurance. Like when you have different fuel consumptions, different tire wears, you get the cars spread out. It becomes a long, like war of attrition kind of aspect to it. And you don't know who's going to come out at the end. You know, that where like the cars can be spread out, but man, it's really difficult to race there. And I honestly, I don't even know if I could do it against people either. You know, AI is one thing. At least they're somewhat predictable, but people are unpredictable, right? So it's adds that factor in there too. I also wanted to mention some exciting news, actually. I've been working on the Formula
Nice.
Ultimate, so I wanted to kind of plug. Do you drive F1, the modern
Sometimes, yeah.
F1s that much?
It's a really great version of modern F1 because you really feel, as opposed to, let's say the F1 games, which are fantastic on their in their own way as F1 simulators, but. Just as a driving experience, the Formula Ultimate is great because it's you can definitely tell how it's like much more like less crazy than some of the older F1s in AMS2. But at the same time,
Yeah, it's
it is still
completely
quite
different.
crazy. I mean, it just has so much grip, and even though you think you've run out of grip, there's still more to get. Like there's still more grip there somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost shocking. I remember I was just doing some laps against some ghost cars at TT at Imola. And now I know why like they don't like to race there in F1 in the top, you know, F1 right now. Like they do it because I think of COVID,
Yeah.
but like it's the speed these cars are going, it's just so intense. Like the left right, you know, it's just like, and you have to be on the edge with going left, changing directions, and it's not like a casual, okay, I'm gonna turn right here, oh, catching a slide, oh, I got it perfect coming out of the corner. No, you have to do that in like milliseconds as opposed to, you know, over like 2 or 3 seconds. It's insane. But the reason why I bring it up as is because I've been working on the build for about I think about 3 weeks now. It's one of the if you look at the setup screen, it's if you're not into setups, it's crazy. Like all of the options, I think they have all of these third spring and third spring dampers. It's and it was a unique challenge for me because I haven't worked on many third spring or cars with third springs. And just to give people a little bit of information about what a third spring does, for high performance aero cars, they'll introduce what's called a third spring. And the third spring controls the pitch of the car as well as the heave of the car. So the up and down motion of the car, and also the forward, you know, leaning on the front and leaning on the back rear of the car. That's where a third spring can control. And that frees up the main springs to handle, you know, bumps. And you can have a softer, you know, set of your four main springs. They could be softer to handle road textures. With most cars, if not in 99% of them in the game, the only way you can handle heave and pitch is with the main springs as well. So that's why it makes springs so important when you're tuning cars. But yeah, that's going to be coming out before the Belgian Grand Prix.
Nice.
And it's pretty much done, and I'm really, really happy with it. There were some things that I found with it that were kind of game-changing, so I'm really proud of it. So that's something to look forward to. But all right, Oz, well, that's it for this week's episode. Yep. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks again.
And to all of you out there, thanks for watching or listening to this week's episode of the Boldcast. We have good things to come. Until next time, take care.